Welcome to episode 110 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Last week we started to take a look at some shots from a trip that I made in the middle of October 2007 to the Shigakogen Highland Plateau in the Nagano Prefecture, northwest of Tokyo. And after we'd looked at about five images, it became obvious that the podcast was going to be way too long for a single podcast. So I stopped there, and we've made this into a two-part series now. So today we're going to look at the other five. There are 42 images in total that I've uploaded to the website from this 3 days. So if you're interested in those, there's a link in the show notes, so do check the rest of them out. Some other really good ones and some not so good ones, but they're all there if you want to just take a quick look. So we're going to jump into it today after the first day. The last image we looked at was of a Japanese macaque monkey, and that was really the end of the very first day. I'd had sort of 30 minutes sleep in the car the night before, and then a few hours sort of here and there during the day. So a little bit of a tiring day, but all in all, photographically, very, very pleasing. And so let's just pick it up from the start of the second day, and you know, see where we can get. Hopefully, and no, not hopefully, we'll finish this today. We split it up, and hopefully that didn't upset too many of you. So let's jump right back in on the second day. So I was up at the crack of dawn the next day, relatively good night's sleep in the hotel. Slept like a log, actually, because of the lack of sleep the day before. But up at the crack of dawn, out, did a lot of shooting around the lakes, ponds, and I've uploaded a number of images from that time. The one that I wanted to look at next, though, was from just before noon, and that is image number 1587. I pulled in at this pond, which is called Kido Ike, shortly before noon, just after I'd come back up the hill. I think this was probably just after we'd caught something to eat. I can't remember. And it was overcast, so the light was sort of being kind to me now. There was patches of mist that were rolling in across the surface of the pond from time to time, and I decided to sort of work the scene a little bit to see what I could get. The first image that we're looking at now really appeals to me because of the mist on the water. It's kind of patchy, not like a sheet of mist, but it's like patchy mist that was rolling in there. And it's sort of just slightly disrupting the almost mirror-like reflection of the trees in the surface of the water. With the altitude being maybe a couple of hundred meters higher than the Ichinuma shots that we looked at last week, and the yellow leaves are coming along a little bit more here as well. To break up that yellow and green, though, we have one solitary orangey red urushi bush, which is it's the Japanese lacquer bushes, and that with its reflection really sort of tops off the shot with a nice accent. I shot this with the 70-200mm f2.8 lens at 110mm, just sort of isolating a small portion of the bank on the opposite side of the pond. It was shot with a aperture of f8 for 1/30th of a second at ISO 100. At this distance, f8 is really plenty to get everything that I want sharp, and I find that this is really, this is the sharpest aperture for not just for this lens, but for most lenses. Though, you know, the other apertures are relatively sharp. They're still a lot sharper than most other lenses. But f8 really is just the sharp aperture, as with most. I was shooting with a tripod for all of the shots that we looked at today and last week, or that we'll look at today and last week. The next one that I wanted to look at, a little bit more interesting, a bit of playing around here again, and that is image number 15, 90. This is really not going to be easy for iPod listeners. If you're listening on an iPod and looking at this on the screen, it's not going to be easy to see any detail because it's a panorama. It's going to be really small in the middle of the screen, especially with the white border. But you know, I do suggest that you take a look at this full size in iTunes or on my website at martinbaileyphotography.com and just sort of see, you know, you're not going to see much detail, but really sort of be able to appreciate the shot, at least for this size. I shot this with the 70-200 millimeter f2.8 lens again at 73 millimeters this time, but this, it's actually a stitch of around 7 images shot vertically. I rotated the lens in its tripod ring, as usual, for me. But I don't know how many people really do this, but I guess if you don't, this is a tip for you to take away. Any of the lenses that I have that have the tripod rings with the shoe there that goes, you know, goes down into the tripod, into your ball head or your mount, When you want to shoot vertically, I think this is pretty obvious, but maybe not. Rather than sort of tilting the camera over on the ball head or with your tripod head, just sort of unscrew the nut on the tripod ring and just swivel the camera around in there. And that really just keeps the balance right. You know, it's much easier. And you know, you've still got almost got the height of the eyepiece because you're not sort of swinging things over on the side. So anyway, that's what I was doing. I'd swiveled the 70-200 around in the tripod ring, and what I'd done there is I always have this pretty much always have a bubble sort of spirit level in the one of the little cube plastic things that goes into the flash mount as well, so you can check that you're level there. But one of the other things that I had to do here, and these are going to be a few tips if you want to try some sort of stitch panoramas yourself. I don't do many, but this is one that I did that I think worked out okay. So a few tips here. The other one is that I also have a spirit level in my Jitsu tripod. So what I did was, first of all, made sure that the tripod was level. And if you make sure that the tripod's level, then you can literally just undo the nut that I have on the base of my Acrotech Ultimate ball head, and that allows you to swivel the whole head around. So you don't actually have to undo the ball head and move it around, because then, of course, you're going to go off-center. You know, it's going to rock to one side, it's going to go up, down, all over the place. But the Acrotech Ultimate ball head has a second screw, a nut, to just swivel the whole ball head. So with the tripod leveled, and then the camera swiveled round so that it's in portrait mode, and then the little spirit level in the flash shoe, I know that everything's going to be right. I sort of swing through the range of the panorama that I'm going to shoot to make sure that the level in the tripod head doesn't run off. If that's all right, then the next thing really is to just start to make the shots. And what I do there, really, I started off, you don't want the settings, the exposure or the focus to drift while you're doing this. So even if you don't use manual mode most of the time, you know, if you're in, you know, one of the other modes, it's going to drift off. So get a meter reading and set your camera to manual mode. For this one, I had selected f11 for 1/20th of a second. And then also your focus. If you leave it on autofocus, then you go through a scene that doesn't have everything at the same distance from the camera, it's going to start to focus, and that obviously is going to change the photograph itself. So switch the lens to manual focus as well. And then really sort of what I did was just went over to the right-hand side of the screen. You can start either way, obviously. Find sort of a little bit further than you think you're going to include in your final stitch, and then just start shooting. And then When I move across, I don't sort of leave it so that you've got what you can see is very close to the edge of the scene. I move about half a frame, so I'm always going to have half of either side overlapping with the next one. This gives Photoshop or whatever software you use to stitch them together a lot more to sort of grab onto, but also As you get to the edges of your lens, some lenses will start to have a little bit of distortion. So you're going to give the application that you use to stitch these images together the best chance if you have quite a bit of overlap. So I worked my way across. I think, like I said, I didn't check this. I should have done, but it was at least seven shots that I shot right across there, moving half a frame at a time from right to left across the whole scene. And really then, what I did was just got back home a few days later and looked at them on the PC. Looked like they were okay shots. So I cranked up Photo Merge in Photoshop CS3 and then just sort of, ran it on these images, and it made a perfect job, all seamlessly merged together. And you do get a load of sort of jagged edges, and where it's sort of moved things around, there's always a certain amount of waste around the image, and you just crop that away and then sort of crop artistically as well. I think I cropped a little bit more than I originally anticipated I would, along the top, bottom, right, and left sides. And then just save it off as a file. You can do all of your other work on that either before you open it or after, but if you do it before, you've got to make sure that you do the same thing to all of the files, or again, they won't match. But I ended up with a really huge file. It was it's pretty impressive. I should have checked this really before I started recording, but huge file. It's around 300 megabytes in size, and this is a Photoshop file that I saved off. I remember sort of smirking to myself when I looked at the resolution and everything. The DPI set at 240 DPI, which is what I usually use. That gives me a nice A3 plus or 13 by 19 inch print from a 5D image. And using the same DPI of 240, it looks like I could get a without sort of blowing it up, shrinking it down in any way, I could get about a 2 meter long print out of this. So it's a pretty huge file, pretty a lot of resolution in there, more than necessary for most work, but you never know. I mean, these sort of things, you could end up sort of blowing it up a lot more than that, because you can get more than you can go higher than that even with a 240 DPI. Just sort of move it to make it like a 180 or something like that, and go even larger. But it's just fun to play around with, I think, and it would be nice at some point to maybe load a roll of A3 plus paper into my printer and just print this out as long as it could be and see what it looks like. Maybe even go bigger with some other sort of method. But anyway, without rambling on too much about this, a little bit of experimentation, a little bit of fun, and I hope that a few of those tips will help you as well. The next image that I wanted to look at is number 1595, and we can see a beautiful spot that has a number of challenges to capture. We can see the timing for this image is just about is perfect with regard to the color of the autumn leaves. It could almost have been sort of painted with all of the colors present here. The first challenge, though, is the positioning of this slope. It comes from the position of this slope, and I'm talking geographically here. It's in shadow during the warm light in the morning, so it's difficult to sort of really bring out the colors. And then by the time the sun gets high enough in the sky to light up this part of the mountain, it's too harsh to make a nice photo. So not wanting to waste the opportunity, I did photograph this location and the surrounding location a few times during the day, and during all of the 3 days actually. And with the help of a polarizer, I made something out of the situation, but not as nicely colored as this one. The best time to shoot this spot is towards the end of the day, when the mountain is lit for a while, but not right at the very end of the day. So really, you're getting the kinder light, the more pleasing, warmer late afternoon light. The reason that I shot these other shots, not the one that we're looking at right now, but the reason that I shot these other shots was really because when the best light is there, there are other problems, and in that it's susceptible to low cloud towards the end of the day. As I mentioned yesterday, well, in last week's podcast, the day before this, I was up in this very spot when a lot of like cloud rolled in, and it was, you know, the scene was it was literally, I would have been taking a blank photograph. We were in the clouds, nothing to be seen. And this has happened to me. I can't remember exactly how many times I've been to this spot trying to capture this in the late afternoon light, but always until now, the cloud has rolled in and kind of robbed me of a chance to shoot this area during this time of year. The other thing is that the sun sort of drops down to the right of this scene, and it creates pretty long shadows across those sort of gorges that we see in the scene here. And that, again, doesn't really make for a great shot with this autumn colour. So the timing is really pretty critical with this particular location. And then, of course, because we're working with Mother Nature, you know, it's always that big dollop of luck is always very, very handy when it comes to getting the final sort of shot. Here, I did still need to use a polarizer to really bring out those colors from the haze that's between me and the subject. This patch of vista is really quite far away, as you can tell by the fact that I shot it at 225 millimeters. I was using the 70-200 f2.8 with a 1.4 extender. The ISO was 100 and the shutter speed was a 15th of a second with an f11 aperture. There are endless opportunities for parts of this mountain to isolate for a shot, and I shot a number of them. I chose to upload this particular one for a number of reasons, but really, you know, compositionally, I was basically lining up sets of diagonal lines. If you look at the image, especially if you look at it on the website rather than on an iPod, you'll see that there are some diagonal lines that run across the scene. And I lined this up from a framing perspective and also from, you know, a position on the side of the mountain perspective. I lined it up so that all of those diagonal lines converge at the bottom right corner of the frame. And I've also sort of put some more heavily wooded areas across the bottom of the image, and then sort of, you know, along the bottom of the frame there, with some dark patches along the bottom, the left to center and then to the right. There's a light patch in the bottom right there where there's just one tree and a bare tree standing there. But basically all of these things are things that I kept in mind as I was composing the shot. And although not a favorite, it's definitely one of the bunch that I found good enough to upload, and you know, I'm quite pleased with it. It's and like I say, those colours, I can tell you what I did. I normally, when I load my images into Lightroom, what I normally do is I just run a preset that I created that bumps up the green and the blue by around, I think it's around 18 on the slider. And usually the red goes up by about 65, because what I actually call that preset is the landscape. What are they called? This is totally gone. The presets that you have on the Canon cameras, picture styles. I call it the landscape picture style emulator, and basically that gives me. I find that those settings give me very similar colors. It's very sort of velvia like, bright, sort of shocking, vivid colors, but it's very similar to the landscape picture style that my 5D gives me, if of course anything other than digital photo professional could understand the picture styles. Lightroom doesn't, nothing does apart from the Canon proprietary software, so that's not possible, but I emulate it. And with this shot, I had to bring the red right back down, because it's really, those colors are natural. The only thing that's changed is the fact that I've polarized the scene, and that really just sort of brought out all of the colors, including the greens. But That's as it was, you know, and it just looks like someone's taken an easel, put a canvas up there, got the paints out, and just sort of sloshed a few paintbrushes worth of various colours onto the canvas. So from that perspective and the composition, I'm really quite pleased with the results. So with that, we're really at the end of the second day of the 3 days, and the next we're going to move on now to the following morning, the 12th of October. The day we've just looked at was the 12th of October. To finish, we're going to look at shots from the 13th on the morning, the Saturday morning, before we took a steady drive back to Tokyo. Let's look at image 1596. Here we see again the Ichinuma Pond at shortly before 6:30 a.m. I was shooting from before 6, trying to catch the mist, which I think adds a great sort of third dimension to the image. What you'll notice here is that in this particular image, and there are a number of others different to this in my online gallery, but this time I chose to make the normal green-coloured tree one of the focal points, with the orangey-red urushi or Japanese lacquer bushes kind of taking second place here. Of course, due to their colour, they stand out much more, so it's not going to be obvious. And then the third thing there, that the birch trees are also adding contrast and a little bit of additional interest to the shot. And they sort of reach up and, you know, to the top, pulling up the top of the image, pulling our eyes upwards towards the tree canopy. But then that tree canopy sort of stops our eyes from going straight out of the shot. And at least with me, with my viewing habits, I then sort of roll back down into the image and start to look again. So I also, another point on composition, I also put the lily pads at the bottom of the frame there for balance. But I don't want too much of this, as they disrupt the reflection of the coloured trees on the surface of the pond. And I wanted to sort of make a point of that as well. So the shooting info for this image, by the way, is 1/5 of a second at f8. With an ISO of 200. I'd up the ISO rather than going for a longer shutter speed, as the mist was sort of moving across the surface of the pond quite quickly, and attempts to blur it didn't really, you know, with longer shutter speeds, didn't really work out the way I wanted to. It gets a little bit confusing, and the mist I found was better being shot pretty much as it was in a still moment rather than a long sort of blur. Shortly after this, I had a walk through the woods that are to the back right of me as I shot this last image. There are lots of great little subjects through there, which I made a number of studies of, really. And again, there's loads of them online if you want to check them out. And there's a link going to be in the show notes so that we'll list them all 42 from the 3 days. I wanted to finish on a light note with a pretty, I like the shot. I generally tend to sort of not put human figures in my images most of the time. But let's take a look at a shot from around 90 minutes later, which is number 1603. I was setting up for this shot in the last moments of this walk through the woods before breakfast, and this guy sort of walked in and plonked his camera down for his own shot. While waiting patiently for him to finish, and really it was probably not even more than maybe 30 seconds, but sort of, not, what I mean is not really patiently, but while waiting for him, I just couldn't resist snapping this, and as... You know, as happened a number of times before, I ended up liking this shot better than the one without the human figure in there. So this is the one that I went with for my online gallery. I think that the thing is, I tend to try to get totally natural images. But then, you know, especially with a photographer, most of the time, if I contain or include a human figure like this, it's another photographer doing what we all love to do. And sort of, you know, the pose of this guy is there, he's messing around with the camera, the lenses and that. And that is something that we all love to do, right? So I think when I get that in the middle of a beautiful sort of scene like this, it becomes a little bit irresistible to me, and I just end up going with that one. I was shooting with ISO 100 again now, with an aperture of 5.6 for 1/60th of a second. You can tell from the way the shutter speeds are changing here slightly as well that the day was slightly, the shutter speeds and the ISO, the day was brightening up slightly now. I think it was around 8 a.m. I'd need to check. Hopefully, though, this last shot will give you a sort of a better feel as well of the general atmosphere of the place. It's a very popular spot for photography at this time of year, and everyone's sort of just wandering around, doing their own thing, trying not to get too much in each other's way at the same time as getting your own shots down in a way that we really want them. I myself, I really love shooting in this area. I came twice, 2 consecutive weeks last year. Would have liked to have done the same this year, but not possible. But I'll be back. I'll be going back. I dare say that at around episode 160 or something, we'll be listening to the similar sort of things. Hope I don't bore you. Hope I can sort of, the images make it worthwhile as long as there's something interesting to talk about along with them. And also, I'm going to always continue to try to interweave any tips that I can think of while we're there. So even if I do start talking about this in a year's time, hopefully you'll stick with me. But that's about it for today. We'll wrap it up there again. Again, sorry for splitting this into two episodes, but I think it's worked out better. And I can see from my clock again that I'm up to 26 minutes again. So it would have been almost an hour episode if I'd not split it. So sorry, but hopefully you can understand that that's probably the best thing to have done. So that's it for today. This week, like I say, split up, second part of the two-part series. I think it worked out better this way. I did want to quickly mention the thing that I mentioned at the end of last week as well, and that is that next week I'm probably going to be publishing a short essay in PDF form on this very podcast feed. So if you come along, you'll probably see that there'll be a file there that you'll need the Adobe Reader to view. It's a 15-page document that I created for a web magazine that had approached me for something like this, but I thought that I'd share it with you as well. But what I'll try and do as well is I'll probably go through and I'll read the key points and make a normal podcast out of that as well, so that the people that do listen and don't really want to read will also have the ability to sort of hear what's going off. But I don't know what I'm going to do with the images. There's 15 in there. I don't normally like to put 15 into a podcast. So I think I might end up just letting you look at the images in the form of the document. That I put it all together in Microsoft Word and sort of exported as a PDF. So it's not an Acrobat sort of done thing. So it's not 100%, but it's definitely good enough to see what I was getting at. And I spent a little bit of time on the layout, so I'd like you to see it as it is as well. So I'll have a think about that though, and I'll publish it the best way I can. Don't be shocked if you see a file in the feed though, rather than an audio file. And hopefully it'll all go well. It's the first time that I'll publish a PDF as opposed to an audio file, so if there are problems, I'll try and sort it out as quickly as possible. If not, the only thing is to just not panic. So that's about it. The other thing I wanted to quickly mention again is the Hokkaido workshop next year. Take a look at www.mbpworkshops.com if you're interested in coming to Japan at the end of next January for a winter wildlife workshop of a lifetime. So I guess that's it. Thank you very much to everybody for listening. Don't forget to spread the word about the podcast whenever you can. The more listeners come on board, the more likely we are to find a sponsor, and that's sort of going to make everything a lot easier for me. So, you know, really do spread the word. And it just makes it a lot more worthwhile when I know that there's a lot of people listening. So, you know, you guys are always great at letting me know that I'm hitting the mark with most of these podcasts. So, you know, let's keep that rolling. And, you know, if you don't expand, if you don't continue to grow, then you generally stagnate. So I haven't done this for a while. So a quick shout to say, you know, mail your friends, your family, everybody that you know might be interested in a photography podcast. And let's try and sort of bump the numbers up again. Not that I'm complaining. We've got loads of great listeners now. And I always appreciate you giving me your time to listen to, you know, to these podcasts. So I'll wrap up there. Thank you very much for listening again. And I'll speak to you again next week. Bye-bye.
PhotoCastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotoCastNetwork.com.